Welcome to Session 37, Resistance and Denial, the Barriers to Recovery. This is the most challenging one to write or speak about, because the minute we read or hear the words denial or resistance, guess what happens in the mind of someone who is resisting making changes in their life or is in denial about what's causing them problems? Yep, you guessed it. They immediately reject the possibility that they are doing just that. And that, in a nutshell, is how resistance and denial keep us trapped and stuck in a situation or condition we truly believe we want to get rid of. The biggest difficulty is that in many cases, any dismissive responses are completely unconscious. Elaine explains. Over many years of this work, those working through recovery have made considerable improvements in their condition. Yet they are still troubled by repeated cycles of anxiety, periods of fatigue, and find themselves disheartened, which leads to refocusing on symptoms rather than recovery and well-being. This is where so many get stuck. The driving question for me is always, what is stopping this person from reaching full and complete recovery? Well, it's rarely just one reason. And in the main, it's a combination of several elements. When you look at the six phases of recovery and the journey you have experienced so far, from those very early warning signs of phase one and the downward spiral that led up to your health crash at phase two, it's easy to underestimate just how much of an impact that each of those phases will have had on you mentally, emotionally, and physically. One of the factors here is that your sense of certainty was removed. Certainty is a powerful driving force, and it's something we all crave. So when it's removed, we can feel completely overwhelmed. This plays havoc with our emotions, which in turn affects how our body feels. We try desperately to find our way back to that sense of control when we could predict what we could do tomorrow and the day after. Uncertainty, the great stressor. CFS or fibromyalgia or long COVID take away certainty. So it's no wonder that we get caught up in a cycle of fear and anxiety with such an open-ended illness. How long will it take to go? How do we know if it's gone? Will I ever get my life back? What if I stay like this forever? Do these worries sound familiar? It's exactly those kind of questions that feed the fear of uncertainty. Relapses. When you are improving and you begin to trust that you're on the mend, your symptoms may return with renewed ferocity. This is very common, but also hugely disheartening. Every person who has fully recovered will be able to tell a story of when this happened to them. It's actually a pivotal and normal part of the recovery process, but causes us to lose the fragile trust and belief we've built in our ability to recover. When we are searching for certainty, we can lose heart, and our negativity bias generates beliefs that tell us, maybe you're stuck with this for life. Doctors still have no answers. Surely they would know what to do if we were curable. Thoughts like this can multiply quickly. Relapses are so disappointing and demoralizing that it can actually feel easier to live with a reduced expectation of your physical capacity than risk that sense of freedom being won and lost again. Have you felt like this? This is the result of a reduced sense of certainty. So, to avoid the painful feelings, a compromise is struck. This often happens in phase three, where a person begins to embrace an acceptance of not being able to do specific things, thinking at least that they won't feel worse if they stay where they are. They look at the past and think that that defines their future. Elaine remembers this feeling well and the thought that perhaps this is the best it will ever be. However, the question she asked herself is a good one. Are you willing to accept a life that's only a fraction of what you wanted it to be? The fact is that life is always about uncertainty, but we just don't like to see it that way. Storms happen, earthquakes suddenly occur, people leave, people die, companies go bankrupt and trains go on strike. We can never truly guarantee anything, can we? Planes get cancelled and even pandemics happen. Yet when we are stopped with an illness, we are shocked that life has changed for us. It's important to mention here that people also win the lottery, get a fantastic job offer out of the blue, and find that they're having a longed-for child after being told that they could not have children. People also make incredible recoveries after life-threatening illnesses. Anthony Robbins, in his Mastery series, explains that there are six human needs. Personality needs. These satisfy our ego. 1. Certainty. We want to avoid pain and instead experience pleasure or comfort. We want things to stay the same and be predictable. Too much of this dulls us and we may experience frustration. 2. Uncertainty. Yes, we crave that when we've had a bellyful of certainty and life has become predictable and boring, that we will feel alive and excited with a little risk. The person who overspends on a credit card and pays it off to only max out the card again is meeting this need, albeit in an unhealthy way. 3. Significance. We need to matter and feel important. The way you choose to honour this need will vary. Some may get this from their job status or from being a gang leader who people fear. You may get this from buying designer goods or living in a smart upmarket area. 4. Connection and love. We want closeness and care from others. We get this by giving, receiving, or sharing love. Think of the person who wants to start a family or who works in the caring profession. Or the troubled teenager who gets into sexual relationships younger than appropriate. All of these will be ways of trying to meet this need. And spiritual needs give us fulfillment. 5. Growth. We are here to become more, reach our potential, and live our purpose. Abraham Maslow calls this self-actualization. Once we meet our basic human needs like food and shelter, we tend to strive for self-awareness and to become more. And 6. Contribution. This is a need to give to others, to be able to be of service to our community or a cause or charity we believe in. Helping others gives us a great feeling. It can also meet our need for significance. We are all driven by these needs. If you had to pick, which one drives you predominantly? In order to meet our human needs, we run patterns of behaviour that repeat over and over again. They become automatic, and we don't even think about them. We are the last person to recognise that we are running a behaviour pattern that gives us a benefit or payoff. A fact that can be really hard to accept is that being ill can offer a benefit or a secondary gain, and unconsciously be meeting a human need. If that statement makes you fume with anger, then say hello to your resistance and denial and please bear with me. What we know is our health crashes for a reason. The job of this pathway is to help you discover why, to identify unhelpful behaviour patterns so you never have that happen again. There is a period of time through recovery that you need to sleep, cry, rest, and allow time to rebuild your health. It will not happen overnight. However, your mission is to pay close attention to check if there are any times when you might be getting rewarded in some way for being unwell. At the chrysalis effect, We have had some honest conversations about this within our recovery communities. And here are some of the unconscious payoffs or gains that people have uncovered. For example, getting care, time and attention from healthcare professionals, family or partners who were too busy to give you their time before. Becoming more significant because everyone is interested in how you are. Ongoing illness creates certainty each day that no demands are made of you and allows you to avoid social situations, difficult work environments, or an overburdened pace of life. Having to prove symptoms are persistent to secure hard-won disability or incapacity benefit to secure regular financial support. And not following your recovery pathway, fully missing bits out, and not addressing the whole 8 areas of the wheel because you don't think you need to or are fearful of change. Only you will know deep down which of these might relate to you. Be careful if you dismiss them all, because that is always denial and resistance showing through. Remember, secondary gain is not something you choose consciously, so no blame can be attached to you at all. Once you are aware that getting these needs met can create resistance and denial, it's easier to break the pattern and get your needs met another way that does allow you to be well. Elaine says, I was so ill all over and I needed time to heal physically. The journey I went on started by looking outside of me for answers. I was looking for cures and seeing doctors. Eventually, I realised that this didn't work and had to take a searching look at what I had done to contribute to this catastrophic health breakdown. The more I read and learned about the mind-body connection, I opened up my mind to face some very difficult facts. I learned that being ill enabled me to escape an overwhelmingly full lifestyle that I could not cope with. I was under huge financial pressure. After battling with trying to control everything in my career and my family life, I had to let go, which was very scary. Being ill allowed me to be cared for, really for the first time in my life. It freed me from being the driving force and the decision maker. People no longer looked at me and said, "What shall we do?" I didn't have to pay the bills. I was ill. I didn't have to go to parties I didn't want to go to. I was ill. I didn't have to worry about not meeting my targets at work. I was ill. I could just leave everything to others. I didn't have to be up and happy and perform for other people anymore. I was ill. And no one expects anything from you when you are ill. I learned that I was the master of creating stress in my life. My two main needs were significance and uncertainty. To meet my need for significance, I worked 24/7 to become number one director in my business. I always saw certainty as boring, so to avoid being ordinary and boring, I avoided it at all costs. To meet my need for uncertainty, which I linked to exciting, I chose to become self-employed, and I would take risks by buying things on a whim and then worry about how to pay for them afterwards. I have discovered that I just needed to change what I link certainty to. I now link freedom to certainty rather than boredom. When you are certain, you can pay your bills. It's calming and freeing. I needed to step off the world because my needs had caused my world to become chaotic and I was unable to cope with it. The hard part was breaking through my resistance and denial so I could see exactly what my payoff was. In the well-being exercises today, you can explore what yours are and then find another way to meet that need. One of the things I did when I realised was to see a financial coach to help with finances. It was just like keeping a food diary. I had to write down everything I was planning to spend and then fill in on a spreadsheet every day exactly what I actually spent. The results were astounding. I just deleted things like car parking and coffees. I went to an exhibition and I thought I'd spent £45 and it worked out that I had spent £94. We do exactly that with food. Remember one of your early sessions called You Are What You Eat, and you would have heard lots of great nutrition advice so far in the pathway. However, knowing what to eat and what to avoid, because it exacerbates symptoms, is a very different thing to actually doing it. Take a moment now to be totally honest with yourself and ask, is your diet as healthy as it could be, or are you still eating and drinking things that are not helping you? Some of us find it easier than others to avoid sugar and refined foods while eating an organic diet with lots of fresh fruit and vegetables. For those of us that struggle with this, it's worth keeping a food diary. Our eating habits can be automatic, so become aware of what you are doing and see if you are resisting eating healthily. It's so true that when you meet up with anyone who has fully recovered, they will not drink caffeine and avoid alcohol. They will be fussy about what they eat and they carry food with them rather than getting stuck with something that won't be healthful. Loss of independence has a payoff. The downside of being looked after. Being cared for can actually arrest our need for independence. In the case of young people that develop CFS or fibromyalgia, it's very often linked to a fear of taking on responsibilities. To be nursed and protected in those important growing up years can arrest development. So they exist in a prolonged childlike state. Parents tend to their every need and the usual discovery, and growing away from home just doesn't happen. The longer this lasts, the more difficult it becomes to break free of their symptoms, which has served to protect them from the responsibilities of the adult world. This creates a scenario where the individual believes that it can't take things on because of their health, and will use this as a justification whenever they're challenged. In fact, that is just a smokescreen that protects them from handling responsibility. Which came first? The fear of being too ill to live a full life, or the symptoms that stop them? Whichever it was, the cycle goes round and round and round and needs to be broken. Collusion and fatigue. If something feels scary and it is more comfortable to avoid doing it, then we can just use illness to justify why we aren't doing it, and no one will argue with us. Outsiders can see it a mile off. Those close to you, though, will have got in the habit of protecting you and won't push you to do more. So this becomes a vicious circle. It's important to recognise that not only do we become fatigued when we feel overwhelmed and fearful, but we also experience the same level of fatigue when we're unfulfilled and with no real sense of purpose. Consider these other types of insidious resistance and denial. Reverting to type. As you begin to get back to normal after this illness, you will have to be wary that you do not revert back to your old behaviours of taking on too much or trying to please everyone. Unfinished business. Is there someone in your life that you have a long-running issue with? Are you angry, hurt, or upset with someone? Do you feel guilty or feel that there's a loose end in your life that niggles away at you? These things come under the heading of unfinished business. They silently drain your energy and affect you emotionally. The cure for these situations is to either forgive yourself or the other person. Let it go. Or take action by writing a letter or calling the person to communicate openly and honestly about how you feel. Think about the outcome you would want and just do it. You may have to be the bigger person here. The people who say things like, it's down to them to apologise and it's not up to me, are carrying around this burden with them every day. Learn to lighten your load. Do whatever brings you relief and a sense of peace. Resisting a new beginning is common. It's very understandable that you may have lost your confidence and illness has become a big fat discomfort zone. Going back out into the world when you've been in solitary confinement is a daunting prospect. If you have given up your old type of work, where do you start? This is when those negative thought patterns creep in. Who would employ me? How could I take on a job or run my own business when I might get ill again? These are the washing machine questions that tumble around in our brain as we consider the prospect of getting back to the world. Things that you would have done without a second thought may feel beyond your capabilities. Did you know that prisoners re-offend, hoping to get caught because they can't cope with freedom? The journalist Alan Travis, writing for the Guardian newspaper, found that 70% of prisoners re-offend. In a survey of 1,435 prisoners, 68% named a job as the most important factor in preventing them from going back to a life of crime after leaving prison, while for 60% it was having somewhere to live. When they are inside, everything is done for them. They don't have to juggle the ups and downs of jobs, relationships and finances. They have 3 square meals a day and don't have to make any decisions. In a way, your illness has been just like that, a prison that has kept you inside and protected you from the outside world. This is necessary for the healing process to begin. When this continues month on month and year on year, staying there can seem a much more comfortable prospect. If you are scared, you don't have the strength or resources to take care of yourself and others. Fear of starting anew. These are the typical causes of a loss of confidence. You worked in a high-pressure industry or profession before you got ill. You fear relapse and don't want to let others down. You fear doing something new. You are worried about telling the employers why you haven't worked for a while. You have no idea how to change your career. You're scared that your impaired memory or verbal recall will mean you can't perform. The idea of taking everything back on fills you with dread. You just don't know how you will cope. You tell yourself all the negatives that might happen instead of listing the benefits of what you would like to happen. You convince yourself you can't do something. You list what you can't do rather than remind yourself of all the amazing things you can do. It's vital that you start to do something to rebuild your self-esteem and belief. Getting some help from a recovery coach will help enormously. Getting back on track. Start somewhere. Volunteering for just a few hours a week or taking on a simple part-time job will allow you to build up your trust in your abilities. Those skills and abilities are still there. It's just that you're a bit rusty. And the only way you can get them back in working order is to gradually use them again. Elaine says, I got a little job for 2 days a week in property sales office, 5 minutes walk away from where I lived. It was easy. All I had to do was show people around new houses. I was so nervous on my first day. After 6 months, I was much more confident and happy. I rediscovered my confidence. And within 9 months, I was ready to move back into running training courses again. I will be forever thankful for my 2 days a week showing people around homes, as it broke the cycle and got me back on track. Top tips. Mind. Make a list of all the qualities and skills you have, and maybe start looking at what you could do for a few hours a week to rebuild your confidence. See how you feel after you've done it. Body. Keep a food diary this week. Review it after 7 days. What are your habits with food? Are there any that might be causing you to feel worse? spirit. Think of the people you know who are struggling with a problem or going through a trying time. Imagine that problem melting away and send them your love. How does it feel to have helped that person? External world. Go onto YouTube and find some Anthony Robbins videos on human needs. This will help you get more from this session. Today, we have explored the human needs that drive us to be in resistance and denial. We have looked at fears and issues that keep us stuck. Fatigue-related illness has a sinister ability to take over your life, and it's only determination, commitment, and honesty that will enable you to break free of these unhelpful cycles of resistance and denial. Remember, we have experienced these resistances and denial states personally. It's how we know they exist. Working through them by doing the exercises this week will support you to make those essential changes to free yourself up to a happier, healthy life. Do let us know on the Facebook forum how you get on, and I will be with you next time.